from the get-go the ability to engage with potential users of the evidence, in this case, the commercial providers that have the ability to make a change that drives the market, that drives inclusion for financial services, is very important in first order.
Welcome to part two of our two-part Vox Dev Talk special on mobile money. My name is Tim Phillips. In our previous episode, I spoke to Francis Annan of Berkeley about his experiments in how mobile money is delivered in Ghana and how cutting misconduct and fraud by agents can make a huge difference to literally millions of people. But of course, research like this doesn't happen at a desk. To make it work, Francis had to build relationships with the people who deliver the service, the service providers, and also the central bank and regulator. Now, it's not an easy thing to do at any stage in a career, let alone when you're still a graduate student. So in this episode, I'm talking to him about how he managed to get the attention of business leaders and regulators, how his research shaped their behavior, and how their incentives shaped his research. It turns out it's a story in which VoxDev has a part to play as well. So Francis, good to speak to you again.
Hey Tim, how are you doing?
Good, thank you very much. The inspiration for this research is your experience of using mobile money, isn't it?
That's exactly right. It's one thing doing research about things that you could imagine being relating to. But my interest in questions around risks that consumers face in markets for mobile money and digital financial services was born out of a personal experience. This was so many years ago. I was then a graduate student at Columbia, and I was actually visiting on one of my summer breaks. It was also around the time when markets for mobile money were also scaling up across Africa, and in particular in Ghana, where it was gaining quite a bit of traction. I had to do two transactions. The value was the same, only to realize that I got charged differently. But as I understood the market at the time, these were very regulated markets, and that prices are set at the top by the upstream player, in this case, the commercial providers, and that at an agent point, you're supposed to be faced with the same price for a given transaction type. And that was not the case. And I was like, well, it may be a phenomenon in the market, or it may just be an anecdote. Perhaps this is not a problem to worry about. Quickly, I had to mobilize and say, well, let me look a bit more carefully into this. If a graduate student at the time, a PhD student, really could get victimized in this market, then talk of this very vulnerable, financially less sophisticated person who presumably probably may not be able to tell that he's been overcharged, right, or he's been victimized. What does this do to consumer welfare? So in places where the value of these digital financial services are supposed to be quite large compared to places where the financial markets are well-developed. And so my poor grandmother or my poor grandfather who lives in the village and obviously getting victimized, and that was not a good feeling. So that's the start.
Did this also surprise you as an economist? Because really in a regulated market where there is competition, you might not expect something like this.
Absolutely. Prices are set ex ante by the upstream player, the commercial provider who runs the platform and delivers the service. And then you know, the downstream, we engage with these retail outlets. It was very surprising given the way the market is structured and the way the market is defined. We also knew about issues around consumer protection or lack of consumer protection in the marketplace in particular, but in places where presumably such consumer protection issues are likely to be significant, perhaps some of these markets that we are looking at. And so on one hand, it was surprising. On the other hand, it wasn't, precisely because of how the vulnerabilities that prevails in the market. These are people that are getting used to these formal financial services for the first time. And so there's a lot of learning. There's a lot of victimization that is likely to happen, but at a scale that I could not just wrap my head around at the time.
So this is when you are a graduate student. You have been working on this and other things, of course, but on this ever since. How many years of work is this now?
This is more than 8 years now. The university could provide you some small grant, like say $5,000 to quickly mobilize and do very quick, simple pilots of ideas that you have as a graduate student to test out. So this was one of my pilot projects at the time, which was funded by a center at Columbia called the Center for Development Economics and Policy. Seed money of $5,000 to mobilize people, to really provide a few enumerators that could be trained and deployed as auditors, what folks might call professional mystery shoppers, who go to the marketplace across different markets and really try to understand how frequent or how common or uncommon such a problem is. Sometimes I look back and I'm like, wow, this has been a long time. But the problems are still there. We need to think really hard about it because of the way the markets are organized.
So to do the research on this, as you try your pilot project, see that there is potential for this research, is it a project that you could possibly do without cooperation from the mobile money providers?
I would argue no, in particular for the class of projects that I have been working on. Even if you find a way to implement a project on the side, without the partnership or the support or the blessing of these commercial providers, when it comes to scalability and impact, you will need them. And I think this is one of the things that has also been on my mind, really generating evidence that there's no scale and that's not creating impact. It's not the best use of public funds, to be honest, for research in the class of research that we do. From the get-go, the ability to engage with potential users of the evidence, in this case, the commercial providers that have the ability to make a change that drives the market, that drives inclusion for financial services, is very important in first order, in just as much as we think of the classic economic questions that we look to study here. Mobile money research in general, of course, it's really about access to finance, about how to improve the financial life of the poor, especially. And so it's really hard to think of access to finance more seriously without engagement with commercial providers. At some point, you're going to need the private sector, these large firms, banks, large telecoms that delivers the services at scale. And for me, recognizing this is where I've invested most of my time, thinking really hard about these questions.
So how early on in this research did you engage with the commercial providers, and what did you say to them when you contacted them?
Well, it's a history, and I'll try to be very quick about it. When I started, this was my first project. I quickly went to MTN because at the time, the central bank was even aware of this problem. And apparently, the central bank had charged even these commercial providers, the MTN, the Airtel Tigos, and all the different large scale providers to actually promote sanity in the marketplace by de-risking some of these fraud-related activities in the marketplace, to be able to build confidence, because it was around the time the market is also evolving. So you need a bit of trust and confidence from consumers to be able to get the markets to evolve, bearing all the potential value that these markets are likely to deliver. These guys are very busy. They are not interested. And so I tried and I was failing at the time. I kept trying. You have meetings with providers, you fly back to the US and then you try to engage them back, one response to your email. And I'm sure folks would really attest to this through their different relationships.
I think many of the people I've interviewed have experienced this over the years.
And I keep saying, look, you may fail, but you have to keep trying. At some point, luck may find you. And if it finds you, it's going to reward your effort. And for the first paper, the one on reputation and misconduct and information, I really wanted to get engagement of the providers to be able to do this in the way that could even deliver results that are very first order to them when it comes to decisions. They seemed to be super interested. You know, they were aware of the problem. So they would tell you, look, this is fascinating. At some point, I have to say, look, I have to do this the brute force way, which is I'm going to work without a provider. If it is true that this is interesting and the results come out, and there's something really good to celebrate about the results, they're going to come looking for you. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what happened. When I went through the secondary route, implemented a project, and eventually got written up. Then VoxDev, and let me give thumbs up to VoxDev for what you're doing. I think it's fascinating. Somehow VoxDev got to write about my paper. Somehow, somewhere, someone from the central bank, one of the governors, has seen this. Quickly, the central bank organized all the commercial providers. Said, look, this guy is reported on this. What have you to say? So in the end, they came looking for me. And so that's really the start of the deep relationships that started. The fact that you keep working, if the efforts get rewarded because of central bank person, like, okay, yeah, I think we need to sit down and talk and think of how to fix this because the regulator is interested. So it's the combination of some pressure from regulators, recognizing the importance of the evidence that has been generated by the research, And then really then beginning to realize that, no, we better talk to this guy.
I mean, when they found out about you, at least they definitely had your email address. It's that economist guy that's been trying to contact us for the last 18 months.
Exactly. Yeah. In all fairness, I'm sure if the CEO was in sync in some of my efforts, really the hard efforts I was trying to get through to get this project going, maybe the conversation would be very different. But I think the challenges are real. The other thing I wanted to say about these commercial engagements, the idea of really asking the right questions.
Uh-huh.
Of course, there are a plethora of questions that we, at any point in time, we could ask. Some more interesting commercially, some not, or even from a policy perspective. But recognizing the goals of these large firms, and recognizing your goal, your interest as an economist in studying these questions, really striking a good balance, right, between research products or outputs that will matter for the firm, but also matter for the welfare gains for consumers, in particular for the class of questions we study, is very important. Mm-hmm. I have really this almost a national randomized experiment going on. And it's really about asking a simple question to the CEO, don't you want to make more money? And he was very intrigued. Mm-hmm. Of course, who doesn't want to make more money? What do you have in mind? And that's where we started talking about. For example, why do you pay the workers, the agents in this market the way you pay them for the past 15 years? Why hasn't it changed? What makes you think that this is the right contract to pay the workers? And in particular, have you thought of alternatives? And what are you leaving on the table? Is it the case that you're leaving money on the table? He's like, just tell me what you want and I'm going to provide you the platform to do this. So trying to understand incentive contracts where you change the contracting structure when it comes to the payment structure for these retail outlets, in this case, the agents across different markets, and studying the power of incentives, which one actually promotes more financial inclusion, but which one also generates more conduct or maybe misconduct in the marketplace. So really asking the right questions can also be very, very important in striking very good relationships that allows you to make progress. The third thing, obviously, is really about setting up dedicated resources within these large firms to be able to advance your work. Even when they said, yes, okay, I want to work with you, and you are not very active about it and you're passive, if the project might fail.
Mm-hmm.
So what I do, and it seems to work a lot, is let's hire one staff who's going to be a staff of, say, maybe MTN for the next 1 or 2 years. This person is going to show up to work every single day, and all he's going to do is basically just advancing my project within the organization.
Right.
You set up dedicated resources, and it creates a lot of seriousness. This is a person who can literally walk to the office of the manager and say, hey, we can have a meeting with Francis in the next 2 days. Here's a schedule. You can get all the coordination problems resolved, right? With very simple interventions like setting up dedicated resources. But of course, I think this has to be done right. These three different things that I have come to learn about how to facilitate effective engagement with commercial providers in this space kind of maps one-to-one with all the individual projects that I've been working on in different ways.
In the beginning, you didn't have cooperation. You didn't get their attention, but you managed to show them that there was something that they needed to know about. There was a case to answer. You managed to get their attention, and what moved that on was being able to explain the sorts of problems that you were solving in the language that appealed to them. And we have to accept that they are here to make money. If that also achieves these social objectives you were talking about, then good. Then being able to keep that attention. I think these are things that many other researchers have experienced, and maybe the problems that they really do struggle to solve.
Clearly, there's nothing scientific here. These are really things that have seemed to work very well for me in my relationships with these commercial providers, both in Ghana and even other places outside Ghana. And I hope that this hopefully will become useful to other people that are thinking of large-scale engagement with commercial providers in this space. But you cannot underestimate the value of asking the right questions. Of course, given 5 different research projects, if there's one really good project that I can run by, it's going to harm the firm, but there's no way for me to implement a project, versus ones that are somewhere in the middle where I can drive productivity, at least for the firms, but I can also improve access to finance for the poor. Obviously, I'll be tilted towards that direction, right? But you also need one that scales. How do you scale it if you cannot align incentives? And so clearly asking the right questions is important.
Where has this relationship reached now? If you have another idea tomorrow for a research project, can you go to MTN or some other commercial provider and get their attention and they will listen to you?
It really took 8 years to build that relationship. So it's gotten to the point where all the fixed cost has been incurred. Literally, it's about placing a call to a CEO, explain the problem, emphasizing the commercial importance, and of course, the social benefits, and really helping them mm-hmm. understand the KPIs that will emerge out of that relationship. And tomorrow you're in the field.
Now, you sit at the nexus of that relationship between the commercial provider and the regulator, because of course they're very interested in the sorts of results you're achieving and the sorts of policies that that implies. Do you take part in that relationship?
Yeah, I have also had very good relationship with the regulator. I occasionally give presentations about state-of-the-art evidence that we have in this space, in particular in the Ghanaian marketplace, and really how to even think of where regulation should be going together. I have had very good relationships. I think 2 or 3 months ago, there was an engagement with the central bank on some of these questions. And there's this broader vision of actually thinking of even how to empower units within the central bank that advances policy about around digital financial services, in particular with very serious research in that space, which we hope to formalize and institutionalize within the central bank. So indeed, that is also another level of scalable thing that we are doing about how to drive regulation in the marketplace based on evidence. And not just that, but how do you improve the capacity of these public officers, right, or public officials in space within the central bank that thinks hard about policy in this space at the center?
You're talking about this all the time in terms of how you scale this up, not how you scale this up to a few hundred or a few thousand, but how this becomes national policy, how this becomes regulation. That's also a particular way of thinking about this, about thinking about the results that you are looking for and what those results mean.
Scalability could take different forms, right? You could imagine this class of questions that I work on, you would imagine one easy plug-in scalable version would be getting the provider to say, here's something I'm going to change, okay, because of this evidence. That is scale, it's national in spirit, and actually in practice. There are instances where the commercial providers, their incentives may not be aligned precisely with class of questions or the kind of evidence that is emerging. In that sense, you're going to need a regulator, right, who sees the bigger total surplus, right, that gets generated in the economy, the societal benefits. And think hard about, if we were to internalize this benefit, ABCD, this obviously will make a lot of sense to build regulation around. Therefore, we need regulators to be able to enforce that. So there's obviously room for different players within the marketplace. In this case, the large commercial firms, but also the regulator, have different skills. Scalability could take really different forms.
When we think about the sorts of problems that you're solving, misconduct in financial markets, fraud and risk, we often think about those in a regulatory way. What you're showing here is that by approaching these things through the commercial providers and making sure that their incentives are correct and the way in which they organize their markets are correct, then you can achieve the results that we would want for that through a different route.
You're exactly right. A lot of times when we think of consumer protection, we think of it as we need the regulator to come in and say, hey, you cannot do this, right? We need a regulator to be stamping their feet all the time. That is one way. And that's also based on the assumption that maybe the large firms are always correct about what they do. But it's also very possible that they might be leaving money on the table under some conditions, and that could be rationalized in some world. And so finding a way to get the firm calibrated about what it means to pursue their own profit or revenue maximizing goals, okay, whatever they are interested in, along with the fact that they can expand the set of their KPIs in a distinct way that allows them to say something about the social value of their existence is remarkably important. And you'll be amazed how many CEOs that are sitting and thinking hard about how do I quantify the social value of my firm. What we show in a lot of these projects is that misconduct is not only high in this market, but it's inefficient. Inefficient in the sense that once you reduce or eliminate the misconduct, everyone in the market is better off, including the provider.
Yes, okay? It gets us back to where we started with this, Francis, where your personal experience, the shocking experience you had of finding just day-to-day misconduct, has led you down this route where you have engaged with the commercial providers, you've engaged with the regulator. But at the end of it, we haven't lost sight of the fact that this is a socially important project.
Yeah, absolutely. This is about trying to kill two birds with one stone. In a way, we are looking for a project that maximizes or increases the welfare for consumers, especially in very vulnerable settings, very low income settings. At the same time, there's some business to be made by the commercial provider. It's really finding this very good balance, again, between how to look for commercially viable projects that are also socially beneficial. I get also asked sometimes whether really the providers are aware of some of these class of interventions. It's a three-part question when it comes to awareness. Is the provider aware that the downstream agents are cheating or committing misconduct? Yes, they are aware, including the central bank. At some point, they had to charge these large firms to ensure that they fix all those risks that consumers face. Indeed, they are very much aware. Are they aware of how to fix it? Maybe. I don't know. But are they aware that the content, right, the specific form that the information programs that we deliver in this market, the two-sided information programs that we propose, will work? Absolutely no. If you gather managers across these firms and you ask them to predict for you what the effects of these simple, very low-cost interventions will do to eliminate or reduce misconduct, they predict absolute zero effect, in contrast to what we find when it's implemented. There's a lot of scope to really understand the internal constraints within large firms and how we can rely on that to actually improve welfare, not only for consumers, but also for the firms at large.
So to sum up, if you were going to give advice to Francis of 9 years ago and his classmates who would be at the beginning of projects like these, but of course it's intimidating, it's difficult to know what to do, you've never done anything like this before, what advice would you give them?
Let me say maybe two or three things. One, pilot any idea that you have, regardless of how it feels, and just convince yourself that this is indeed something of value or not value. Of course, the expectations in these engagements should be real, right? As we described, you may fail, but failing doesn't mean that you will not succeed. You're going to have to keep doing it, and at some point, your effort will be rewarded. So again, keep doing it. Again, nothing scientific here, but I think the idea of piloting, doing, and the condition of now getting into it, it can be a whole different conversation. Try as much as possible to engage these providers, but find a way to link the questions to key things that matter to the commercial providers and keep working harder. Eventually, it's going to be fine.
They are fascinating pieces of research, Francis. I'm going to be looking out for more of that. And I would also say I am delighted that VoxDev managed to help you along this journey. Thanks for talking to me about it.
Thanks a lot. And I'm excited to be able to do this.
A reminder of those papers, Misconduct and Reputation Under Imperfect Information, from the Journal of Political Economy, 133, No. 5, 2025. Randomized Entry, The Equilibrium Effects of Entry in Digital Financial Markets, and Gender and Financial Misconduct, A Field Experiment on Mobile Money. And you will probably want to read about it on VoxDev. So an introduction to Francis's work is Reducing Misconduct in Ghana's Mobile Money Markets, benefited all from June 2024. This has been a VoxDev Talk. The best way to make sure you don't miss an episode is to subscribe or follow us. You find us wherever you get your podcasts. It's never been more relevant for me to point out that VoxDev has many articles about mobile money, and also there is a Mobile Money VoxDev Lit as well. And our past episodes, as always, are at voxdev.org. If you like what you're hearing, please tell someone else about us and leave us a review. VoxDev Talks is a Talk Normal production. The assistant producer is Megan Bieber and our editor is Andrei Zargarian. Thanks to Oliver Hanni and Iman Siddiq at VoxDev.